This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The HBO vampire series True Blood begins its second season Sunday, and season one just came out on DVD. My guest, Anna Paquin, stars as Sookie Stackhouse. Sookie isn't a vampire, but she's in love with one, Bill. He became a vampire during the Civil War and has tried to maintain the gentility he had as a human. But that's hard to do when you're a vampire. Sookie has a special gift which sets her apart from humans. She's able to read their thoughts. That gift is often a burden because she can't shut off their thoughts, and what people are thinking is often not very pleasant. She can't read the thoughts of vampires like Bill, and that's one reason she finds it calming to be in his presence. Anna Paquin won an Oscar at age 11 for her performance in the 1993 film The Piano. Let's start with a scene from the new season of True Blood. Season one ended with Sookie killing in self-defense the man who had murdered several women in town. But another murder remains unsolved. Who killed her uncle, the uncle who had abused her when she was younger, something she had confided in Bill?
Did you have anything to do with Uncle Bartlett's death?
He hurt you.
Oh, my God. Is it that easy for you to kill? Does human life mean so little you can just kill on command, toss someone in the water? I cannot have people dying every time I confide in you. I never felt more inhuman than when I had to kill Renee. It still haunts me. And now you've made me feel like I killed another person. I feel sick. I always thought as different as we are, somehow we could still be together. And now I don't know. I don't know anything. Please. Say something, Bill.
I cannot, and I will not lose you. For all the ways I have dismayed, aggrieved, or failed you, I swear I will atone. But I am not sorry. I refuse to apologize for what you have awakened in me. You are my miracle, Sookie. For the first time in 140 years, I felt something I thought had been lost to me forever. I love you. And for that, I shall never feel sorry.
Anna Paquin, welcome to Fresh Air. I really enjoy your performance on the show. Most movies and dramas are heightened versions of reality. They're just more dramatic than reality.
Mm-hmm. Or you condense a lot of really dramatic, real moments into a short amount of time that makes it appear more dramatic.
Exactly. But a story like True Blood is even more exaggerated and more dramatic because so many of the characters have some kind of secret power or gift that they can use for good or evil. And things are especially heightened in the romance scenes because, like in your romance scenes with Bill, there's a certain danger because, after all, he is a vampire. And arousal brings out his fangs, which recede in regular life. And he sometimes bites your neck while making love. How does all that affect how you play those love scenes together?
Well, you play it for the reality. You play it for the emotional truth of it. And the things like fangs and blood gags and effects, those, I think, serve to make the story more exciting and to heighten the reality. But basically, it's two people who are falling for each other experiencing something really intimate together. And for him, when his fangs come out, he's scared that she's going to pull away. And instead, you know, it's them being literally bare before each other and accepting each other for who they really are.
So let's talk a little bit about the special effects aspect of True Blood. Mm-hmm. Like in season one, you are near death, and I think your back has been broken in an attack because you can't feel your legs. And to and
Sookie gets almost killed on multiple occasions.
Yeah,
I'd just like to point out.
And Bill the vampire shows up to rescue you and explains that you should feed on his blood because vampire blood has restorative powers. Vampires try to keep that a secret. So you have to
I feed off of his arm.
You feed off of his arm. So what are you doing for real in that scene?
For real, there was a guy named Dan from Masters FX with a prosthetic arm that is exact replica of Steve's arm, except made out of latex, complete with hairs on the arm that were individually like threaded through the latex. There's a tube up the inside. There's an opening, and it's like an animatronic arm. And Steve has his arm sort of taped or stashed behind his back. And Dan is maneuvering the fake arm, which has a blood pump attached to it, which I then am supposed to drink gallons, well, actually kind of did drink gallons and gallons of blood from, slash have it run all over my face at about 4 or 5 in the morning while we were fighting the sun from coming up in the back lot in the Warner Brothers jungle.
Oh, yeah, good point, because he can't be in daylight, so you have to do
so all of those nighttime scenes.
Yeah.
Well, obviously there's a lot of night shooting, but also, you know, there's a limited number of hours of nighttime. So by the end of the night, you know, you're racing to get everything done. And because of the messy nature of a lot of the blood gags, often they're left to last because a massive cleanup is not really an option in the middle of a shooting day night. So, yeah, so... interesting.
So what is the blood that you're feeding on? What's it made out of?
I actually don't know. I would imagine it's some kind of food coloring type situation, but it has, depending on what it has to be used for, it has a different consistency. They offered me low carb blood because they were being considerate of my, you know, short shorts diet. And being an idiot, I said, oh, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, you know, low-carb blood, i.e. flavorless blood, really gross after, like, the first 10 takes of feeding off it through a latex arm, which already tastes like, I don't know, dead and nasty. I was kind of regretting going the girly girl route on that after the sort of first few gulps because, you know, a little sugary watermelon, strawberry flavored, something or other, I think might have made it go down a little easier.
So they couldn't have just put in some vanilla extract or something, take the edge off?
I have I mean, there's different flavors of blood. I mean, they make it in different flavors depending on who's going to be drinking it and what they prefer. Yeah, so lesson learned.
Your character, Sookie, is she seems like she'd be a tomboy, but she dresses very, like, tomboy sexy. She wears shorts and tank tops, but they're very revealing tank tops. But they're very plain tank tops.
She's a practical girl. She has a limited budget, and she lives somewhere where it's, like, 110 degrees
exactly,
outside during
right.
the summertime. You know, but she's athletic and comfortable in her body and comfortable in her skin and confident.
So it takes a lot of fittings to get something that looks like it was bought at the local Walmart or something.
Except, ironically, my costume actually, my Sookie shorts, my waitress shorts from last season, they were off the rack Old Navy. And the T-shirt was just American Apparel. But it's the matter of finding the right, you know, the exact right item and the right bra. You know, it's gotta look right. Also, one of the things that we do try to do in the costume fittings and in the as far as each character is not shopping too far outside of the budget of the actual character. So the fact that we have Sookie in a lot of stuff that is, you know, from Target or Old Navy or sort of, you know, similarly not high-end stores, I think is really appropriate because she obviously wouldn't be able to afford some really snazzy design or something or other with her lifestyle and with her salary. And I kind of like, you know, whereas some of the vampires have these really fabulous closets of clothes because they've been around a really long time, and the sort of, you know, the premise of our show, I guess, have figured out how to be rich because they all seem to drive fantastic cars and wear expensive clothes, and that's sort of, you know, they've got it figured out over the last, you know, few thousand years.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Anna Paquin, and she's now starring in True Blood on HBO. Now, you and your co-star, Stephen Moyer, who plays the vampire mm-hmm. Bill that you're in love with, you're mm-hmm. a couple in real life now, right?
Yes.
Now, it must be funny to to be in a real romantic relationship while playing characters whose relationship is so powerful because she has special powers that will prevent her from ever being herself with any human man. At least that's what Bill's convinced her of. And he's a vampire. So, like, when they come together, I mean, it's just, like, such drama. mm-hmm. It's like no human relationship, I think, could, like, quite measure up to the drama that surrounds theirs. So you play that dramatic relationship. So is it funny to be in a real relationship while playing this, like, super heightened, dramatic, you know, vampire mind reader relationship?
I mean, I don't know it any other way as far as my particular job and my particular relationship. I mean, you know, obviously, the reason we were cast opposite each other is because we had chemistry. So that energy has been there from day one. And, you know, this is how we've grown as a couple. So it's kind of hard to imagine it any other way. I mean, it's kind of funny when you think about it that, you know, we go to work and that's some of the scenarios we end up and you know, as far as our job is concerned, but that's just the way it is.
Did having a real relationship affect the on-screen chemistry and make it either stronger or any different?
Well, I think that with any acting in any medium, really trusting the people that you're with makes it easier to go to deeper and more open and scary places. And being as how a lot of the Bill and Sookie plotline is physically demanding in various ways, it's really great to completely and utterly trust the person that you're in those scenes with. And I think it just makes it easier.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Anna Paquin, and she stars in the HBO series True Blood. Now, everybody knows that you won an Oscar at the age of 11 mm-hmm. for your portrayal as in The Piano, the Jane Campion movie, which is set in the outback of New Zealand. And without getting into a kind of complicated story here, let's just say it's a kind of transgressive version of a romance fantasy, with Holly Hunter playing your mother, and she kind of symbolizes creativity. She refuses to speak, but she plays this, like, wild, beautiful piano. And Harvey Keitel kind of symbolizes masculinity freed from the constraints of European
literacy,
morality. Yeah. And European repression. He's freed mm-hmm. from European repression. So in this film, you witness your stepfather chopping off your mother's forefinger with an axe mm-hmm. in punishment for her infidelity with Harvey Keitel. Mm-hmm. And you witness the infidelity when you peek through a keyhole and see your mother lying naked with Harvey Keitel. I'm guessing mm-hmm. that when you shot this, you didn't actually see Harvey Keitel naked.
No, I did not. They, as with most films, shoot the interiors on stages, and the exterior where I was peeking through, there was a bunch of camera equipment inside covered with, you know, blue, like, rain-protecting gear. Also, that I didn't even get a full version of the script. There was a cut and paste in a scrapbook that I had.
Oh,
because,
interesting.
I was 9, and that wouldn't have been appropriate.
Yeah, well, and Harvey Keitel is totally full frontal in this. So when the movie came out, did your parents let you watch the movie?
No. I got to see like the first 20 minutes.
How strange was that to get an Oscar for a movie that you're in and yet not be allowed to watch it?
Well, I mean, I wasn't allowed to watch many films that were.
But you weren't in them.
I know, but I've done a lot of stuff that wasn't really necessarily age appropriate for me viewing wise. I don't know. I mean, I didn't know it any other way, so it didn't seem odd. I mean, the whole thing was odd.
Yeah, the whole thing
was odd.
Right.
Being in New Zealand 1 minute and then being, you know, in LA winning an Oscar and having lots of people that you've never met before in your entire life wanting to talk to you and staring at you and all that. I mean, the whole thing was statistically very improbable, if you like. So that wasn't really the weirdest part, I wouldn't imagine.
So I know you were protected from seeing things in the movie that would be upsetting, but in the movie your character witnesses her mother's finger being chopped off with an axe.
Yeah, that was pretty unpleasant.
So you did witness it?
Yeah.
Did it scare you?
I honestly don't remember. I mean, it was, you know, those sorts of scenes. I mean, yeah, at the time it felt intense, but it was also, I don't know, it was really muddy and they had the rain machines and it was cold. And I'd been working with those people for several months. So the line between real and fiction in that kind of instance was pretty well in place, you know. So I don't know. I don't remember being scared. Because I knew it wasn't obviously happening. I got to play with the rubber axe.
Oh. Right, so you could see it was rubber.
Yeah, you know, like they were very good about that sort of stuff. Like, uh-huh. And here's the finger.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Anna Paquin stars in the HBO vampire series True Blood. Season 2 begins Sunday night. Season 1 just came out on DVD. Gypsy, the Julie Stein, Stephen Sondheim musical based on the autobiography of stripper Gypsy Rose Lee and starring Ethel Merman as Lee's monster of a mother, opened on Broadway in 1959 and ran for 702 performances. Critic Walter Kerr famously called it the best damn musical I've seen in years. On the 50th anniversary of Gypsy, our classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz still agrees with that assessment.
Some people sit on their butts, got the dream, yeah, but not the guts. That's living for some people, for some humdrum people, I suppose. Well, they can't stay and rot.
Although West Side Story may be more directly related to Shakespeare, Gypsy might very well be at heart the most Shakespearean of all Broadway musicals. When I was in graduate school, some of my classmates concocted a musical version of Hamlet, putting new lyrics to the songs from Gypsy. Critic Frank Rich once said that Gypsy was the Broadway musical's answer to King Lear. I think the two greatest stage performances I ever saw were the great Shakespearean actor Paul Scofield's King Lear and Ethel Merman as Rose Hovick, the ruthlessly ambitious mother of actress June Havoc and superstar stripper Gypsy Rose Lee. In the ferocity of her sense of betrayal by the daughter who achieves the success she wanted for herself, Merman rose to tragic heights. Rose's turn, her big final soliloquy, is the Broadway version of a real operatic mad scene. Good as Merman's successors may have been, none of them came anywhere near her in this number.
Why did I do it? Why did it get me? Scrapbooks full of me in the background. Give them love and what does it get you? What does it get you? One quick look as each of them leaves you. all your life, and what does it get you? Thanks a lot, out with the garbage. They take vows and you're batting zero. I had a dream. I dreamed it for you, June. It wasn't for me, Herbie. And if it wasn't for me, then where would you be, Miss Gypsy Rose Lee? Well, someone tell me when...
Gypsy's magnificently brash, quintessentially American vulgarity makes it one of Broadway's greatest showbiz musicals. The music was composed by Broadway pro Julie Stein, whose best-known showstopper before Gypsy was probably Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. And his lyricist was a young Stephen Sondheim, fresh from writing the lyrics for West Side Story. Though they never collaborated again, they were an ideal team. Stein's score was pure Broadway by way of vaudeville and burlesque, memorable yet unpretentious and never artsy. Sondheim's lyrics are by far his earthiest and most colloquial, yet they also have their own kind of Broadway wit and elegance, as in these intricate rhymes in Together Wherever We Go.
Whatever the boat I row, you row.
A duo.
Whatever the row I hoe, you hoe.
A trio.
And any IOU I owe, you owe.
To celebrate Gypsy's 50th anniversary, Sony has reissued the original cast album with some additional material. One highlight is what seems to be a demo of Merman singing the poignant song that in the show the lonely young Gypsy sings to her toy animals on her birthday. Anyone who thinks Merman was only a belter needs to hear this recording.
Little cat, little cat, ah, why do you look so blue? Did somebody paint you like that? Or is it your birthday too?
New bonus tracks on the cast album include an interview with Julie Stein and a bizarre autobiographical number recorded by Gypsy Rose Lee herself shortly after Gypsy opened.
Hello. I've been in show business almost all my life. My fondest memories are of the years most of you remember as the Depression years. Mother and I were so poor we didn't even know there was a Depression. We went broke during the boom. All we knew was that vaudeville was dead. How we missed the good old two-a-day. I mean two meals a day, not shows. That's why I started in burlesque. I don't know how I got the job. I was only 15. Of course, I was big for my age. I wasn't exactly what you'd call a stripling of a girl. I was 38 when I was 13.
With the great Merman and the touching Jack Klugman as the man who loves her but can only take so much, Gypsy is one of the best original cast recordings ever made. More than most show albums, it lets us breathe the pungent atmosphere of the whole show, of Broadway itself.
Lloyd Schwartz is classical music editor of the Boston Phoenix and teaches English at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He reviewed the new 50th anniversary reissue of the original cast album of Gypsy. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org.